Are you ready, Dad?
I'm ready.
Okay. Are you excited?
Very excited.
Are you nervous?
No.
You're not nervous?
Not really.
You should be.
Why?
I don't know. Who knows what's going to happen? They could go wild and crazy. No, it's going to be very chill. Say hi to the confidants.
Hi, confidants.
You speak a little French.
Je parle français.
Oui. Ooh, oui, oui, oui.
Un petit peu.
Is confidant just friend in French?
Could be.
You don't know?
It could be confidence. It could be just someone is confident. Oh. I'm not sure if it's a noun or a verb or what. I'd probably never used that when I learned French, which was 50 years ago in Paris. So.
In Paris? When you motorbiked across the country?
I did.
How romantic.
It was. I met a girlfriend that was trying to get her away from... Her mother was trying to get her away from me during the summertime.
Uh-oh. Playa.
Before she actually went to college. And she didn't know that we met at the Eiffel Tower in the middle of...
I didn't know you met at the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, that was a good place for us to meet. When she arrived, I said, I'll just meet you at the Eiffel Tower at a certain date at 12 noon. And
this was pre-texting, pre-Google Calendar, pre-Bumble.
Yes.
How did you meet this lady?
Well.
Do you remember?
I had a friend of mine who was dating her. And her family was kind of a...
You stole your friend's girlfriend, Dad? What the fuck? This seems to have happened a lot back in the day.
I was doing him a favor because her parents didn't really like him because he was the singer in a band.
And what were you at this point in your life?
And he had long hair.
So did you.
Yeah, but Milo was...
Oh, we got a name. Sorry, Milo. Yeah.
Milo's still a good friend of mine. I still talk to him all the time.
Damn, does he ever bring up, remember that time you stole my girlfriend and took her to Paris?
No, because that's not the way it was. I went to her house to pick her up for him because her parents weren't approving of his appearance, apparently.
So he goes, better. You were a hippie.
We all were. So I said, yeah, I'll go pick her up. And I did. I had to walk into this big mansion type of house in Darien, Connecticut. And then there was a full on dining room dinner going on.
Oh, my God. And
with
you just
candles
took her?
And everything. Yeah.
It's like a scene straight out of The Notebook. Do you ever watch Notebook? That probably made you cry.
I remember there's a movie called Notebook, but I don't recall what it was about.
The girl was a rich family and the boy was poor and they had a summer love that lasted a lifetime, but the family didn't like him, so he had to leave her, but they found each other later on in life. But this didn't seem to happen with that girl. You took her to Paris, drove across the country, and then ditched her, right?
No, we actually lived together for 9 years.
Oh, shit. This was what's her name?
Martha. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I didn't know this was Martha that you took to Paris.
I didn't take her to Paris. Her mother sent her to Paris, and I happened to be going to school there that year to fulfill a language requirement for the University of Connecticut. And I went to the Alliance Française on the Boulevard Raspail. I remember that.
You had to go to France to fulfill a requirement? That's pretty epic to do in college.
Well, back in those days, there were some pretty good deals. Icelandic Airways was flying from New York to Luxembourg and back for like $200.
That's nice.
And so I got a ticket, signed up for the school, and...
Were you doing it for school, or were you doing it so you could see the world?
No, I was doing it for school.
Wow.
And first we arrived in Paris, me and this other kid that I met along on the trip from Luxembourg to Paris. And he says, well, I'm going to Paris too, and he was going to meet his girlfriend there too, but he goes, I don't have any place to stay, and I said, well, neither do I. We're just going there. We didn't have apartments or anything. And so we met these two girls at a train, at the bus station when we
got
there.
You both had girlfriends, but then you met two girls? Oh, my Lord.
Alien and Lilo.
Oh, my Lord.
And they came up and asked me a question of what time it was or something because they saw I had a watch on my wrist. And it was at the bus station and subway station.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Met. It's called the Metro in Paris. And I said, oh, sorry, I'm not French. But they both spoke English.
Uh-oh.
And they said, well, what are you doing here? And because you guys kind of look lost. And we said, well, we kind of are. And they said, all right, well, come with us. We're going to the left bank. They lived on the Ile de la Cité.
I've been there. You took us there and showed us.
That's correct. That was their apartment with a guy named Jean Beaufort, which they shared that apartment. And we actually, they said, well, we're going to break you into Paris, tourists are always looking, you know, to go to a cafe and have a drink and this and that.
Bread and a cigarette.
Yes, and we'd sit outside in the cafe and on a summer evening in Paris. And we said, well, that's great. So they took us to where they lived.
But what about y'all's girlfriends?
No, they weren't there yet.
Yeah, that's kind of the point. What happened there?
Nothing happened. We were... We were being welcome to Paris, and it was fun. And so we walked around the city a little bit, and then we bumped into this guy. I still remember his name. It was John Standard. He was from Connecticut as well.
Oh, and he
saw us talking to the girls and stuff, and he says, "Oh, you guys are American."
Like, I want a piece of that.
And he was an American. He goes, "I kind of look for Canadian and Americans to help him out because
they lost."
He goes, hey, I know this guy. It's got a hotel. It's probably got a room that you guys can have for a couple nights.
Wow, that's
and
a hookup.
So he set us up, and we said, hey, Lilo and Alien, we'll come tomorrow and we'll take you out to lunch since you took us out for drinks. Mm-hmm. And we said, okay. So we did that, and because we knew where they lived, and it was a nice, friendly. Mm-hmm. Relationship, only just friendly.
All peace and love back then.
Yeah.
Very like pre-social media.
Alien had gone to school at the Sorbonne there in Paris. And Lilo was actually a Swiss girl who was, she was going to school too, but both of them apparently for the month of July and part of August were on what they call en vacances because it seems there's a lot of Europe takes the summer off, and they were both students and stuff. And they said, you know what? We were looking to rent our apartment, our half of the apartment at Jean Beaufort's place. And if you need a place to stay, and I said, yeah, I'll do it. I'll take it.
And you got this epic place right on the river that was like right in the middle of the city, and it was stunning. You took us right by it.
Yeah, it was on the Ile de la Cité.
How old were you?
Right on the Seine. I was 20 years old.
So that was a 10-minute story by my father. Coffee Dots. Welcome to the podcast. We're absolutely sure we don't know everything. I'm Kelsey Darrow, your host. And this week we have a very special guest. This is my Faja, my father, Michael John Darrow, John Michael Darrow. We got a great intro of you telling a very dad-like story where you kind of deter and you kind of go on and on, but you always come back. You always come back. Thanks for being on the podcast, Dad. And thanks for starting out with your story about Perry.
You're welcome. But I didn't finish it yet.
Oh, what's the end?
Well, see, that's when I arrived in Paris.
Oh, God, we're still going.
So Lilo had to go back to London to pick up a paycheck because she was working there for a friend or something. And she had to come back to Paris for some reason. But she says, hey, I'm hitchhiking back to London. And I said, well, I'll go with you because I want to go to England and buy a Norton 750 Commando motorcycle. So we did that. And while we went to London that weekend, there was a big concert. It was called, it was the concert on Shefton Mallet in Bath. It was the summer.
We got a big UK audience.
Of 1970. They were trying
right
to recreate
Woodstock.
They were trying to recreate it. And a lot of the same bands were still there.
No way. So you got to go to like Woodstock number two, England?
Well, we did. We hitchhiked from London to Bath.
No way.
And we got on this truck with that was picking up kids along the way. They were all doing the same thing. And so when we got back, my motorcycle was getting prepared. We were all ready. And so we hopped on the motorcycle and we drove to Paris. I dropped Lilo off. And on that day in June where we had set, Martha and I had set up, I arrived on my motorcycle.
Oh my God.
And she was standing there under the Eiffel Tower with her bag.
Oh my God.
We threw it.
Chick off. You got to pick up your main chick.
That's right.
So, oh my God.
I picked her up at the Eiffel Tower and she said, well, okay, I have to stop by my, residence where she was already registered to go there. So mm-hmm. we met the concierge, who was an old lady. Mm-hmm. She wouldn't even let me take the bag.
She smelled you as a playa. No men in this house. This lady only. She could smell you a mile away. She's Parisian. She knows guys like
she
you.
She wouldn't even let me carry the bag up. And I looked at Martha, and Martha looked at me, and Martha goes, I'm not staying in this place. I said, don't worry about it. I already got this apartment.
Oh, perfect.
So she said, okay, I got to call my mom and tell her I'm not staying here.
Oh, my God. This is so Emily in Paris. This is the new Netflix show. You're describing it.
So I took her to the apartment, and Alien and Lilo, she met them. They hadn't left yet.
My
so we
God.
We stayed on this little, like, rolled up, a little, like a
mattress.
What are those beds that, you know? A
futon.
Futon bed.
Yeah.
We stayed for a couple days in the living room.
Uh-huh.
And we met John. We were real, you know, we became really good friends. And they stayed for a couple more days. And then they were both off. And we moved into the apartment.
And you just took over the lease. Bada boom, bada bang, baby.
We went down to the Alliance Française and both registered for classes. And we went to it's funny, we'd go to the post office to use the phone. Because now all the apartments.
No one had phones.
They didn't have phones. Nobody had phones, you know.
No.
You had to, you know, a hardwire phone. So we'd go to the post office and call, and we told. And Martha explained what she was doing, and her mother says, "Well, okay, whatever, you know, we'll, you know, send you the money that we were going to send to the place that you were going to stay." And I had money too, and so we had a vehicle to drive around in, which was pretty cool, had an apartment, and we spent the summer
in Paris.
I
can see a glisten in your eye as you think back on these fun memories.
It was a fun time. It was, see, we didn't plan things much. We just went and did them.
That is nothing like my life now. I mean, although what I'm doing with Jammy, by the way, audience, we're doing a socially distanced podcast in Houston, Texas, where we met my family halfway for Thanksgiving, and we're in Jammy, and we have destinations, and I'm very much a planner, but I'm trying to make this as like free love, freedom, no planning, but people don't live that way anymore. It's so much anxiety. Like the idea of, I don't know, what do you want to do? People can't do that anymore. Like just to go discover, like, hey, let's drive to Bath today.
I think there's some people that do it, but not very many. It's
not
different.
Not with me.
They used to put these books out when I was, young, mm-hmm. when I was in late teens and early 20s. Europe on $5 a day, where people would go from city to city, and there'd be these little, like, and they still have them.
Yeah, they still have them.
And what is the word
almanac?
That they used for the places where you would meet other, and other kids would be staying there.
Oh, like a hostel.
They were hostels,
yeah,
right. Exactly.
I did the hostel last year.
Yeah, well, they still do that, huh?
Okay, so I did kind of get to do that experience last year for my birthday. It was a very big deal for me to go.
You just go to a city and find a place like this, and you stay overnight,
yes.
and you wander around during the day.
And I met people. And you want to hear the craziest thing? So I did this last year. I made a video about it where I let my Instagram followers choose my vacation. So I really didn't have a plan, even though I had like kind of an agenda. I let people pick where I went. And I ended up getting totally thrown, going to Portugal. I stayed at a hostel, my first time ever staying at a hostel. Met these great kids, met this one younger guy who we were sitting one night in like the library, and he was American. And I was like, so what brought you here? And he was like, oh, well, I don't know if you've ever heard of this YouTube channel that I love called Yes Theory, and they have this video where they let their followers choose their Instagram vacation. And I go, wait a minute, that's literally what I'm doing. I love Yes Theory. How did you? Oh my God. So we connected over that. And then that's not even the crazy part of the story. So I leave and I go on the rest of my adventure, lose touch with him, don't even really remember his name. A year later, I'm in Los Angeles, and Yes Theory throws an event where all the fans can come and learn about, you know, what they do. And motherfucking guess who shows up? That kid who I met in Portugal a year earlier. We had no idea. I just look at him and he looks at me and we go, oh my God, what the heck?
You mean it's a really a smaller world than you think?
Yes. I was like, what are the freaking odds? It was crazy. But yes, the world is different than it is when you grow up. I always am fascinated to hear your stories, Dad. I think the podcast audience is going to be jazzed about this episode because I don't really feel like they know a lot about you. Obviously, Mom has come on the podcast. She's been in some videos. Also, we should mention, if you're watching this on youtube.com/KelseyDarrow, you can see my dad's dog right now, which he's also wearing. Go ahead, explain.
My dog t-shirt.
Yep.
This is Moxie. This is my little man.
That's your
he
best friend.
He goes with me everywhere.
And you also have a picture of him on your shirt that you're wearing right now.
That's correct.
And you love this dog more than your children easily.
No, he's right up there, just as even.
It's even
Steven.
You're lying.
It's even Steven.
You love this dog more than anything in the world, which is very dad of you.
I would do anything for my children. I would do anything for my dog.
I believe
that he's family. He is.
Yeah. Well, obviously, you don't have a t-shirt with my face on it, but that's not the point. I think the audience is really going to get...
If you gave me a t-shirt with your face on it, I would wear it.
That's true. Okay, maybe I'll get you that for Christmas then.
Okay.
The audience doesn't know really much about you because Mom has been on a few podcast episodes and she's been in some BuzzFeed videos. And Mom is very outgoing and loud, just like me. She knows how to kind of put on a show. You are not like that necessarily. You're not very like... You're like a pretty private person. And I think when I got into the business, it comes a little bit maybe of a surprise as to the field that I got into and the work that I do and the things that I talk about. So does like what I do for a living, like how do you feel about what I do for a living?
Well, I've always agreed that, you know, you should follow what you love and what your passions are. Mm-hmm. And you as a child,
yep.
You've always had a passion and you've always enjoyed performing. Mm-hmm. As a little kid, you'd always, you know, round up everybody and say, okay, I'm putting on a show.
I know.
And you'd do the show and you'd sing and dance or do magic or whatever.
Oh my God, I went
and
to magic
I have VHS tapes of those.
Throwback.
And then you continued on in school. You'd always get the lead in the school play and this and that. And we'd go and we were always proud of you. You always did a good job. And we even when we sent you off to college, I remember you said, you know, I love you were, as a matter of fact, today is the Alabama Auburn football game,
we should watch that later. Turkey, or what are they called? The Iron Bowl.
The Iron Bowl. It's mm-hmm. a big rivalry.
Big Southern football game.
And we went to a couple football games with Kelsey at Auburn. It was great fun. And she said at the end of the year, gosh, it's a great place and I've had a lot of fun and, you know, I've learned a lot, but they won't let me get into the fine arts because mm-hmm. I don't have any seniority there yet.
Mm-hmm. You have to like.
I got to get to New York or LA. I said, really? I said, okay, because I said this is costing me a lot of money. So let's go.
Sure
let's get you a place.
That out of state tuition.
I know. So I said, let's get you a place in New York and get you started in whatever you want to do.
Wow, and I'm so really lucky in that regard. Not a lot of parents would do that. I don't think a lot of parents force my friends into college and to stay into college, and like they definitely help them pay their way.
I think that in a way college is a little overrated. Agreed. These days it's more, I learned it when I went to college, it was more
to UConn,
it went the University of Connecticut, it was more I mean, I minored in philosophy. I majored in psychology, minored in philosophy. How do you get a job, you know, with those majors? It was more of a...
What did you want to do? You were just doing a bunch of acid and were like, I should probably talk about psychology and philosophy, right?
Well, I started out as a pre-med student and then...
What?
And then I thought I was going to be an industrial psychologist of some kind.
What is an industrial psychologist?
Well, it's somebody that works in a, you work as a psychological advisor for a big company. You know, if you have to talk to employees and, you know, and when employees, even though they spend a lot of time being employed in your company, they spend the most of most time of their day there. So they have, they bring their problems with them, and sometimes you can help
makes
them,
a lot of
know,
sense. I had no idea.
Out.
I like kind of forgot about your whole psychology aspect of your life, because obviously I'm a mental health advocate, very involved.
Mm-hmm.
And you have learned and been through all of that. I mean, on the side of the educator, not necessarily a person going through it, but like, what was it of that age that you were at made you so inquisitive about the mind and psychology?
Well, I think it was a result of not necessarily being a doctor per se and following that, but it still was involved in the medical field, mm-hmm. you know, the psychologist or psychiatrist or something like that.
I would never peg you now, though, as someone that is like interested in that stuff.
Well, basically I used a lot of that my whole life. I was always a salesman of some
yeah.
kind. I was always buying or selling something. I always, you know, I started out selling newspapers. Mm-hmm. I had two newspaper routes when I was a little kid.
But you weren't like a seedy car salesman kind of guy. You were like a good stand-up blue-collar business salesman.
I always got along with people, and I looked at college more of a
pit stop.
An idea, learning ideas and learning social skills more than anything else. Mm. You know,
yeah.
how to get along with people. I always got along with most people.
What happened? You're so grumpy now. How old are you?
You get old.
How old are you? Tell the audience.
72.
You're 72. Yeah. You don't look 72, but you do act 72. You've been
sometimes.
You've been through a lot in your life. You know, you've gone, you know, the hippie route. You were Woodstock guy, anti-war, peace and love. Like, I think that's where a lot of my liberal ideals came. And then you did kind of find your way into a more traditional life.
Well, I always had a, even though, you know, it was peace and love for, you know, from, let's see, 65 mm-hmm. when I started college, that and then after that for another 10 or so years, rather than take a real job, what I call the real job, mm-hmm. a 9-to-5 job
mm-hmm.
or something like
that,
my girlfriend and I bought and sold show horses.
What the fuck? It's so random.
Yeah.
My favorite story that you told me once was when you and your girlfriend broke up that were selling show horses together. You gave her horses as like a parting gift.
Well, no, we owned a bunch of. We
yeah,
had
but you
a,
let her keep the horses. That's insane.
Well, I only took two. And she had like about 6 or 8 of them left. And I left her the horse van and I took my pickup truck and off I went to another world. And then. And then about 5 years later, I met your mother, and that was 35 years ago. So we've been married
wow.
for 35 years now. She was always a hard worker, and I was always a hard worker too. But
I wouldn't say mom was necessarily like a traditional I mean, nothing conservative about that woman in the 80s, I'm sure.
Well, she was a product of a pastor.
Preacher's daughter.
She was a preacher's daughter.
And we
Baptist
know what happened
pastor,
to those.
And they're always the wildest ones. And,
and
so,
some of her brothers and sisters stayed conservative, but mom was not. But so when you guys met, I feel like, how did it go? I mean, first of all, your love story is insane. I mean, you guys knew each other for 3 months before you were married.
Correct.
You proposed just saying... My mom said, hey, you'd be lucky to marry me. And you said, well, why don't we go get married? And she said, okay. And then you guys drove to Vegas and got married at the Little White Wedding Chapel.
We didn't drive there, but we flew there.
You flew and then she
we
followed.
We were in Hollywood and we were at the Magic Castle.
Castle.
We were having dinner and we were discussing, I don't know, relationships and this and that. And she said, looked at me and said, geez, I'd be a good wife. Why, how come nobody's ever asked me to marry her? And I said, well... Would you marry me? And then she almost dropped her drink. We were standing in line or something like that to go to one of the shows. And she goes, well, okay. And so that's the
what
way
the
it
fuck?
Happened. So I was working in Vegas. I was working at that
sales,
time for
yeah.
a company called W.R. Grace Company.
Yep.
And And I called her and I said, because we had set the time to get married.
That is not normal.
Sometime like in October. So it was about 6 or 8 or 9 months later. We had planned to get married because we were going to do this, buy a house and do get all settled in before we got married. And I just said, hey, you know what? I won a bunch of money at the Baccarat table. I said, they gave me a real nice room at the top of the Tropicana Hotel. I said,
ew, the Tropicana!
I've got a airline ticket waiting for you at LAX. Why don't you hop on to Vegas and we'll get married? She said, okay, I'm on my way.
But Dad, do you realize how insane that sounds even to meet someone and then plan on like even only after 6 or 9 months of knowing each other?
Well, it's only 3 months, but what I said was, come on and we'll get married. And she goes, okay, I'm on my way. And so when she got there, we went shopping over at the Caesars, you know, all those shops and everything.
She got
we
a
found
pink
her,
cocktail
she,
dress.
She got a big, long, fancy dress.
No, it
got,
was not big, long. It was poofy and a cocktail dress.
Yeah, I can't tell you what it was.
And she had bird feathers in her hair.
That's right. And we went to the Little White Castle. And
Little White Wedding Chapel.
The Little White Chapel, I'm sorry.
And you were wearing a pink tie. You had pink accents to match her pink cocktail dress. She did not get an all-white wedding dress.
I had a three-piece suit on and everything, and we got married. And not only did we have a limo to take us, but when we after the ceremony...
Which you got married by Elvis, by the way. An Elvis impersonator.
No, that was the 20-year reunion.
Oh, you got a regular person the first time? Oh, okay.
Yeah. The 20-year reunion
you
that
got
we went,
by
we
Elvis.
Got we re, re,
remarried,
redid our vows, and we had Elvis as was part of the guy. But anyway, they gave us a small certificate to walk across the street, and we got two splits of champagne, two little 9 ounce bottles of champagne as part of our wedding.
Get package
ceremony. There was a package at the Little White Chapel.
But Dad, all of this is insane. Yes. But what I find even crazier is that you wanted to marry this person after only knowing them for this long of a time.
Oh, we knew. We were in love.
How did you know?
We just realized that one day. We were sitting at Half Moon Bay, which is up in San Francisco area. And I was there working for the week. And I stopped and stayed with Christy for the weekend. And we were up there and we drove up there for the day to watch the sunset and everything. And we sat on the beaches and we looked at each other and we realized, wow, that's when we told each other, you know what? I love you. And that's the way it happened. And she said, you know, I love you too. And I said, wow, this is amazing. And as we looked into the sunset in Half Moon Bay, we saw a whale breach the water and shot water out of its spout. And then we watched this other couple that were walking, and they were kind of walking aimlessly down the beach. And then all of a sudden, when they walked by us, all of a sudden they held hands and started, you know.
And so you were like, we're emitting so much love.
Do you believe this? That's really happening. And then we saw this beautiful sunset and everything. And I said, wow.
This is meant to be. Fate.
It is. And that was 35 years ago.
Oh, dear sweet confidant. Do you finally feel like you can take just a little bit deeper of a breath now that we have gotten through this election season? Or do you feel like maybe not at all because now we're coming up with the holidays? Well, listen, if you're feeling stressed or anxious, you know what I'm here to tell you about forever and always. BetterHelp Baby. BetterHelp is a therapy app that matches you with counselors. It's affordable. And, you know, traditional counseling wasn't really for me. I didn't realize online counseling was exactly what I needed to feel comfortable. And the best part is financial aid is available. I know therapy is a privilege. We acknowledge that. But hey, maybe you could get this as a gift for someone this holiday season. Wouldn't that be great? It's a private and safe online environment, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 24 hours. So many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. I want you to start living your happier life today. And as a listener, you're going to get 10% off your first month by visiting BetterHelp.com/CI for confidently insecure. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P
confidantsober.com/CI. Back.
Confidant, sober girlies. Are you looking to cut back or cut out alcohol this year? Come on, join me and Zach on our sober journeys. Recess Zero Proof craft mocktails are the perfect alcohol replacement. We've recreated the cocktails you know and love, like a lime margarita and a grapefruit paloma, so you can enjoy the flavors and feelings of those cocktails without the booze. That's right, zero proof, zero compromise. Listeners can get 15% off the Recess mocktail sampler at TakeARecess.com/Kelsey. Each can is lightly sparkling mocktail infused with functional ingredients like so many stress balancing adaptogens made with real fruit and only 25 calories or less. It's a guilt-free way to unwind. Whether you're relaxing after work or hanging out with friends, make Recess mocktails your drink between drinks or, like me, your forever mocktail. I am so obsessed with the ginger lime mule and also the grapefruit paloma. For spring, it's my favorite go-to weekend drink. Get 15% off Recess mocktails now at TakeARecess.com/Kelsey so you can enjoy your favorite cocktails without the consequences.
To the show.
That is, again, crazy that, like, of course there's all those rush of serotonin emotions in love when you're first meeting someone, but to sustain that for 35 years is crazy, because you guys met a little later in life. Like, you did not have, like, by society standard, the age limit milestones that people had. Like, you both, I always tell people, like, you both enjoyed your lives before you kind of decided to settle down, which I think is really great, because I think so many people want and rush to have kids. Like, I'm 30 and so many of my friends are having kids and married. And
yeah,
I'm,
I,
like,
was 38 and your mom was 29. We'd been down around, down the street and around the block a couple of times.
Yeah.
We, both of us kind of knew what we liked and what we wanted. Yeah. And, you know, we both had, you know, established ourselves a little bit. Yeah. And, you know, Christy, she had a little money from her working. Uh-huh. And she, like I said, she was always a hard worker, you know. She,
oh, yeah.
You know, and
is that what you liked about her?
I just liked her independence. She, you know, she was, you know, an independent woman on her own.
Yeah.
She had a boyfriend, but she wasn't with that boyfriend anymore. No, she didn't have a boyfriend.
Dad is the king of Mr. Steal Your Girl.
No, she was. She had already. They already split up, but they still hung around with each other. They had a crew that they hung around with.
Wow, he must have been real jealous of you, boy.
No, he had other. He had his own girlfriends.
I know, but you always kind of look at the ones your lover ends up with and goes like, "Okay, I see what happened there. That must have been fun." So, when you guys were at Half Moon Bay falling in love, were you on any drugs?
On any drugs?
were you doing any mushrooms?
Looking
we had
stopped in this little bar in Half Moon Bay and had a couple of drinks and stuff.
Okay.
And then we had wandered out to see the sunset.
Yeah, but that's nothing.
And we drove up there for the day to, you know, just to spend the day. Yeah,
that's nice. People don't do that shit anymore. People don't go to hang out at the parks.
Well, I think the people probably, if you talk to anybody that's ever been, you know, had some extended time with each other, like if they were married for 15 or 20 or 30 years, I'm pretty sure that you'd find that they have stories and experiences that are what you might call
insane,
abnormal or out of the norm. You know, it's not like, well, I was introduced to this girl and we dated a few times and then we decided that we liked each other, and then we went steady and we gave each other, you know, the little friendship rings and stuff, and then we planned to get married and have children and this and that and
that's how I think a lot of what I saw growing up happened.
Really?
Like, your story is not like anything else I've heard with a lot of people that's worked out for this long.
Yeah, well, see, the first girlfriend, the real girlfriend I had, I was a little bit younger than she was, and my parents moved away from Richmond, Virginia in my senior year in high school, and I had to go away from that because she was my girlfriend for a year or so. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, like I said, different, you know, experiences, different relationships. So they are what they are.
Mm-hmm. I think you grow and learn, and you learn what you like and don't like out of every relationship. Like, even though I've been through some of like the worst, dated the worst fucking people.
Yeah.
I think you learn, like, everything is a growing experience, you know? Like, you learn a lot about yourself.
Sure. Life experiences, social interaction with other people. I mean, it was, you know, I remember when I first started college, I didn't really have a girlfriend. And I was going, wow, how come I don't have a girlfriend?
Because you're a player.
It wasn't working out. I mean, I was going out with a few of them, but I always really liked to have a girlfriend.
Do you think you're hot?
Hot?
Yeah. Do you think you're hot?
Oh, you mean attractive to the female?
yeah.
In my life? I think I'm okay. I'm a nice enough guy. And
who looked at you when you were younger would call you a hot piece of ass. Like a Richard Gere-looking motherfucker. A lot of women that I know from your past would talk about hot stuff.
Well, I would leave that up to whoever. I don't like to talk to about myself that way.
You should. You're a Libra. You wouldn't. Do you think it's funny that I'm a Leo, Mom's a Leo, you're a Libra, and Jared's a Libra? Do you think I found you in Jared? I don't think Jared's anything like you. Do you think Jared's anything like you? Do you believe that girls tend to marry guys like their dad? I think that's such an outdated thing.
I don't know. I've never thought about that, really.
You guys aren't very similar, except for brown hair. Although you're getting a little gray.
I don't know anything about...
Freud?
No, the Libra, Leo...
Oh, astrology.
Whether astrology... governs your life, your social life, or your life in general. I don't know if I believe that.
Do you think it's cool or weird, or do you never think about it and not care that me and my sister are both in our 30s now and we're not married and don't have kids?
Well, I remember, my girlfriend and I lived together for 9 years the first time. And we said, we can call each other. We're married to each other. We're committed to each other. Ooh. We don't have a piece of paper or anything, but that's the way we looked at it. But that was from the 60s. That's the way it was.
But I think it's back to that way. I think things are very liberal now.
The world is circular. It all comes back sometimes.
Time is circular.
Yeah. Things that were out of... go out of style, they come back into style.
Bell bottoms right now.
Clothes.
I'm wearing bell bottoms.
The way you look, long hair or short hair, and that's just the way it is.
Are you proud of the kids you produced?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
They're both good, solid, loving people.
That's true.
And that's the most important thing, I think. Whatever they do as a job or however they not necessarily how they make money, but just how they live, here in a capitalist society, that's their choice. And like I said, I think that you need to find something that you love and follow that. As I said before, you follow your passion and do what you love to do.
Because you had two girls, and I think, like, we don't really use the term tomboy anymore because I think, like, all of that gender spectrum thing is changing. But, like, I was what you would have considered a tomboy growing up.
Well, you were both athletes. You were both in, good shape. And, of course, I lived a lot of my sports life vicariously through my both you girls, and I coached you in soccer. We played flag football. Mm-hmm. I coached you guys in softball.
Mm-hmm. Softball was my favorite with you. I think softball was my favorite sport.
And I played, I played every sport.
You were a catcher.
I was a catcher. Yeah, since I was a little kid, I was a catcher for 9 years. In baseball, and I played football with all the, the little league teams. Baseball and football, it was like a Pop Warner. It was called the Pop Warner League, and I played basketball in that league, those leagues too. And I always made every junior high and high school team. I always made the team. I always played, and I got a couple of scholarships for college to play football, believe it or not.
I do believe it.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of leads me to a question that I've always considered you a guy who's very secure in his masculinity and like your place in life. Like you're just very confident, I think. I don't know that I've ever really seen you struggle.
See, there's that word comes around again, confident.
I think you're very confident with like your image, and like I've never seen you struggle with your identity growing up. Like you always seem to be very in touch with who you are. And I think I feel so lucky that I got to see a very strong male figure in my life who, A, was never afraid to let mom shine, like be the center of attention and like have her personality. And she was never like punished for it or made to feel bad that she was this loud, eclectic, successful.
I'm proud of her. She's good. Yeah. And I'm proud of you girls for what
you're
doing.
Well, that's rare. I remember going over to like my friend's house when I was a little girl and I'd be like, why is your mom home? Like, why isn't your mom at work? Like, what the heck is your mom doing here? I didn't understand that mom was so unique in what she did and how she worked. And I also think it was really important for me to see a strong, you know, confident man who wasn't afraid to show emotion. Cause I remember seeing you cry during like Purina commercials. Like if the dog was too cute, you would cry. Like you're very sensitive.
Yeah. Your mother always kids me about that stuff, but
important to show a guy is. That's
it's part
not
of my
to cry.
Part of my personality. It's
you have a very soft heart.
I really enjoy a good emotional movie too. Really enjoy
especially
it,
especially if it's about a dog. Forget about it. See you later. You're fucking gone to pieces. That or like war movies. It's like, oh my God, you're a waterworks. But I think that was important for me to see because I think that that's like kind of the problem with toxic masculinity. A lot of like women grow up thinking men have to be this thing. And I think I got to see a guy who wasn't afraid to let the woman shine and be super successful because you had your own success in business, but you were able to work from home. So, you know, you were the one that was taking us to the soccer games and dropping us off at school and taking us to camp and stuff, which like was a traditional feminine role, which I think is total bullshit. And I don't see that anymore, thank God. But I think you were a chain breaker in that way, in that like, I didn't realize how valuable that was until later in life, that I got to spend so much time with my dad at home and playing soccer and stuff. Cause like not a lot of people got to do that.
Yeah. Part of, my working day was in the afternoon. I had to go to soccer practice that you guys had every afternoon, one sport or another. And I made the decision in my life because I was old enough to, as I said, mom was 29 and I was 38.
Yeah.
And then after a couple of years of struggling, both you girls, and we were happy that the good Lord gave us,
healthy ding dongs.
Yeah. Well, we were just happy that we got pregnant. It was
struggle.
It was a struggle for your mom, but I made the decision early on that, and because we were both established already, I made the decision that that was going to be part of my life. I wasn't going to miss that because I enjoyed watching you all play sports, and I think that you all enjoyed playing them.
Oh,
it was
fun.
It was a fun time, and you know, so you were good and healthy, and you were all both very athletic. You could run fast and jump high, and you know, like the commercials on Keds used to say, the sneakers, they were Keds.
Yeah, it was all the sneakers.
They let you run fast and jump high.
So then how, like, it must have really hurt your feelings when I was in my early, early preteen years, because we did not get along in my preteen years.
Oh, you were just a little feisty. It wasn't that big of a deal.
I have a lot of regret about that, and I think I've told you that a lot
before.
We
were more like your mother than your sister.
Megan
your
is
sister
more like
Megan
you.
Was more like me. She was kind of mellow and this and that, but you were always feisty and in your face. But that's just the way you were. We had two different personalities, and so be it.
Did you ever worry about me as a kid? Because I experimented with like drugs and alcohol very
You know, I
young.
Thought nobody could fool me about anything. You two rotten kids fooled me on everything.
Really?
Oh, I had no idea you guys were involved in smoking pot. Or
I was selling weed.
Well, I had no idea. And that surprises the hell out of me because, you know, I'm a child of the 60s.
I know.
It was just a thing you went through. Everybody goes through it. Luckily, I mean, I got through it all. I mean, I think, you know, I think pot was in my life for like 10 years and I just grew out of it. I figured the same thing would happen to you. And you did.
I did. I did, definitely.
And Megan did too, both of you.
And just, then we both stopped drinking too. Like, I think it took longer for that the drinking to stop.
It's all
for
part
us.
Of growing up in life.
But you never worried. You were never like, "Oh shit, she's well." A see,
I was I was a little older. You know, when you guys were married, not married.
Slipped.
When after we got married, you know, it was a couple of years later. We had both of you, and you know, it was that was. An interesting part of the life. We both, your mother and I both enjoyed it, but I certainly decided that I wasn't going to miss your still growing up. So that's why we did what we did.
I want to ask you about when you were diagnosed with cancer, because I was away in LA. And so I wasn't really, I was with mom in Vegas when you called her and told her about like your scans being not so hot. And mom was like, "I got to fly home," because she was supposed to come to LA, and then she was like, "I just got to go home and be with your dad." And I remember being like, "Oh shit, like you don't really think about your parents' mortality in that way." And then that happened. And what, you're like 7 years in remission now?
Seven and a half. Coming around in April will be 8 years.
And what was that like for you? Because,
well, it was pretty spooky right in the beginning because when I discovered there was some issue, I had bladder cancer. We were all skiing in Telluride, our whole family, the girls and your boyfriends were with us too, I think, at the time. I mean, I was 65 years old, and then all of a sudden I noticed a little splotch of blood in my urine, and it spooked me a little bit.
And you're stubborn, and you never go to the doctor.
Well, I didn't. There was no reason for me to go to the doctor, really. I mean, I didn't have any real serious problems that I can ever think of. And but it was one of those things where when I got home and playing golf, as much golf as I played, I had a lot of friends that were doctors. And the first thing he also was next door neighbor for a while, Kerry Haskins.
Shout out Dr. Haskins.
He said, "Hey, first thing you do is you go to a urologist. If you don't know one, I'll give you a name of one." Well, I looked one up, and he said, "Okay, come on in. We're going to take some pictures and this and that." And
Was cancer ever going through your mind?
I didn't know. I didn't know what it's called, hematuria. I didn't know what the result of having those issues might be, but it didn't cross my mind. But he said, "Well, you know, we're going to go and we're going to take some pictures." And they did that. And the first thing to do, he called and he goes, "Oh," he said, "you have a mass in the top of your bladder." And I went, "Whoa, what does that mean?" He goes, "Well, you know, we got to get a biopsy." And he goes, "I'm a nut and bolts urologist. I'm going to send you over to Moffitt Cancer Center," which is
like
one of
the best
top
in the country.
Which is like
down the street from our house. Amazing.
And he says, I know a brilliant surgeon there named Philip Spies, who's also
shout out to Dr. Spies.
Hey, Dr. Spies, he's become a good friend over time as well.
Saved your life and all.
Anyway,
that.
But he, you know, when Dr. Yaki who was the first one to, you know, that I went to, the urologist, he goes, "Well, you know, I've had a client not too long ago that had, that had bladder cancer too." And I said, "Oh, well, how's he doing?" He goes, "Not too good."
He's
and I
dead. Went, oh fuck. Goes, so the first time someone told you it was cancer, were you like, "Oh shit?" Or were you like, "Okay,
well,
I got
no,
this.
They said, we think it may be." So I had to go and get the pictures all done. And then when they looked, they go, "Okay, we're going to do, you know, investigation, we're going to get a biopsy and stuff." And he did the same thing, and he said, "Okay, I'm pretty sure it's cancer." So so I went to Dr. Spies at Moffitt, and he did everything that Dr. Yaki said. And then I also had another procedure, colonoscopy. They wanted to make sure that the cancer. No, they just wanted to make.
Well, because all that's so close and
everything,
entwined.
The intestines and the bladder and all that stuff. They wanted to make sure it wasn't coming. I had what's called an adenocarcinoma, which is in bladder cancers. There's only 2% of bladder cancers is an adenocarcinoma. Great. Normally, they come from other. Organs and that are already cancerous and it's spreading to there. Mm. Well, mine came from a urethral remnant, which is a holdover from your umbilical cord from your belly button. It goes to the top of your bladder, and that was part of the system. But it turns, instead of a passageway, it turns into like a ligament.
And sometimes
the urethral remnant is the cause of some cancers.
Something like you were going to get it no matter what because your belly button umbilical cord just like grew into a toxic piece?
We 100%
don't know.
No, we don't know 100%. What I discovered was that 50% of all bladder cancers are caused by smoking.
Smoking, children.
That's right.
Cigarettes are trash.
I had smoked cigarettes since I was a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
On and off for 5 years, I'd quit, and then I'd smoke for 3 years, and then I'd quit for 6 or 7 years, and I'd smoke for 5 or 6 years. And I mean,
but you were always able to quit cold turkey,
but I was
right?
Always no. I smoked.
Really?
I smoked cigarettes, and I smoked. I mean, that was just everybody did it when I grew up in my generation.
And you guys didn't know like the
and my parent. Both my parents smoked and smoked all the time.
Yeah,
but it was. One of those things where I stopped smoking cigarettes, but I smoked cigars playing golf.
Yeah, but it wasn't like the last part of your adulthood when you were diagnosed. It wasn't like you were an active smoker. This was something that was left over.
Well, I figured I'd already done the damage because I had smoked for 30 years.
See, what you do now.
I was either smoking one thing or another. It wasn't a cigarette. It was a joint. It was a cigar, you know. Any rate.
Did you feel like a sense of regret? Like, oh shit, I shouldn't have done that? Or were you like, I can't change the past?
It is what it is. Yeah. You know, I figured, look, we got to go forward. We've got to move forward now.
Because so it was pretty gnarly. You were like stage three, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And but luckily it hadn't gotten outside my bladder. And Dr. Spies said, look, we're going to try to save your bladder or part of it, you know, whatever we can. And so it was a... 6 a.m. till 5 o'clock in the evening, I was on the table and they were taking.
I remember being there the last time you ever peed out your pee hole. The morning you got up and then we took you to the doctor and they were like, go pee, whatever, if you have to pee. And I remember being like, that might be the last time my dad ever pees out his pee hole. Because were you thinking about that? Were you thinking, oh my God, this might be the last time I ever pee out my pee hole?
No, that never crossed my mind, actually.
And then you woke up.
I was just hopeful that they would save my bladder.
They couldn't.
So they took out they took out the urethral remnant. They took my entire bladder. It's called a radical cystectomy. And they also removed my prostate.
Mm-hmm.
And they took some...
Does that mean you lost your butt G-spot?
No.
I never thought about that. If you don't have a prostate, does that mean your butt G-spot is gone?
What's a butt G-spot anyway?
All right, never mind.
I never really searched that. The butt is the off ramp in the highway of life to me.
Oh my God.
Okay?
So you never went excavating.
It's not.
So they gave you a bag. What's the bag called? It's not a colostomy bag.
Urostomy.
So colostomy, a lot of people know as people who poop in a bag.
Correct.
But you still can poop, but you got a bag that holds your pee.
Exactly.
And you never, since you don't have a bladder, you never have the feeling that you have to pee.
Exactly.
That's amazing. I mean, despite obviously the horrible thing you had to go through to get there, I think that that's like a big perk.
All I can say about this is I was ready to move forward and go aggressively with this. If I needed to take chemo, fine. If I needed to take radiation, fine. And surgery, fine. Let's get going with this thing. Because he said, look, you've got a bladder, but it did. A tumor, but it hasn't gone outside your bladder yet. So we're going to do the surgery. And he goes, okay, and we're going to schedule it for April. Well, they did it in March. And I'm going, oh, let's get going and get this thing out of here right now.
I feel like I would feel awful knowing it's in me.
He says, look, it's a slow moving, you know, the adenocarcinoma is very slow moving, but it's aggressive. But we're going to take care of it at this time.
Yeah, I would not be able to like live knowing that there's like cancer in me.
Well, I was in the hospital for 5 days and they said, you're going to be there for about a week. And they said 5 days you could go home. So I tell you, the alternative was not positive. So I said, look, if I have to have a urostomy bag, you can live with it. And I have. You play golf, you
and
move around.
And not only
you still
that, you help other people with it. And
I've actually tried to get some time to do volunteer work at
Moffitt.
But they have a list of people that
want it's the best in the country.
And well, the other thing is that when people survive, if you're a cancer survivor, we call ourselves cancer warriors.
Yeah.
Because we've made it through the war.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
I would think that most people would want to
help
other people, talk to them about it, explain your position and your experience. I tell people, look, if you're going to have what I did, you can live with it. Like I said, the option isn't very positive.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, I know you're a very religious person. You renewed your relationship with like the church and religion and God when you got sober.
With Christy's mom too.
Yeah. What do you mean?
When Christy's mom came.
Grandma Margaret.
Your grandmother, when she came and lived with us for a while, she was a very, very,
very religious person.
And she was trying to explain to me, as a boy, I grew up a Catholic and I had my first communion and my confirmation. And I became agnostic when I became, I think it was probably when I was about 18, because I really couldn't understand it. And I never really knew what salvation was. And that's what she taught me about 18 or 20 years ago.
I didn't know it was Grandma Margaret who got you back into
She's the one. I said, how come I sit in church sometimes with you guys and then all tears come to my eyes? And she said, God's talking to you.
So I know that you believe when you die, you will go to heaven because you are saved.
Absolutely. I know I'll see my friends that have being 72.
Well, the Christmas list passed from cancer too.
Yes. The Christmas list is getting smaller every year.
Well, and you know, that's kind of like what I was thinking about when I was when I wanted to ask you about the cancer stuff was like, you once told me that like, you are just grateful to get up another day. Your remission, you were just like, I could go at any time and be pretty happy with my life. And I'm like, oh my God, that gives me so much anxiety. Like, I hate that thought. But the truth is like, you're very comfortable with the idea of death.
I am, but I'm also happy working. I'm just doing what I'm doing with the family. I'm happy to wake up on the right side of the dirt each day. So we'll leave it at that.
But like that, I don't know. Like, your parents both died when you were pretty young. I never got to meet them.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky that, like, I have never had a very impactful close death, except for my cousin Chris was pretty gnarly. But I have, like, a severe fear of you and mom dying. It's, like, a big source of my anxiety in my therapy sessions.
Well, we're both doing pretty good. Since both of us now have passed the normal death rate. When I was growing up, most men would die at 62.
Because of heart attack.
And women would die at 68.
And the death rate's just...
And now it's like, I think a woman is 77 and a man is 72.
How long
72.
Do you want to live? As long as you can? Well, you want grandkids. I feel bad.
No, that's okay.
You don't like kids like me, though. You would like your grandkids.
Sure, I do.
We both hate kids.
I'm sure I would. Children are a blessing from God. And not everybody can have them. And that's why I know you talk about it all the time. Rescue dogs. There's lots of dogs that need a family. But, you know, think about rescuing children, too.
Yeah.
There's
a lot of
kids that need
a
family.
Foster.
Need somebody that would care for them and love them. Because there's a bunch of them out there, and people, it's unbelievable that we've, you know, another thing too, that number of, and I feel strongly about that too. You think about 40 or 50 million people that in this country that, you know, have been aborted. And yet mm-hmm. there's still thousands and thousands of kids that need to be, that would love to have a family. And if they, the older they get, the harder it is to for them to get adopted and dad to have a family too.
Would you and mom ever like, well, no, I think you and mom would probably foster.
I think we're in our we're in our golden years.
You guys got rid of us. You're like,
Christy's
fuck that.
Christy's not in. I know. We finally got rid of those rotten kids, right?
Yeah, we're doing all right.
I always joke about that all
the
time.
We still come around from time to time, but
well, I think that you know your mother's way too busy to try to concentrate on raising or taking care of another child.
But you've got lots of time for Naminal.
But you never know. Maybe, you know, who knows? Maybe she'll decide to stop working and we'll sell the company. And then she'll say, look, I've got a lot of time. We'll get another little kid that really needs, you know, maybe an older kid. Maybe
that
a kid
that
would be 8 or 9 or 10 years old that's you know, people... You know, sometimes they don't want
to
give.
I would love to do that.
You never know.
Jared and I talk about that all the time because I think the idea of having our own children is not really something on the table, at least not right now.
You never know. It might pop up next.
I know.
Who knows?
You say that a lot, too. You say that about, like, with love, too. I remember you're saying, like, when you least expect it and, you know, you would kind of.
Don't go looking for it. It'll just happen when it's supposed to happen.
Heartbreaks in my early teens and early 20s, you know, just you'd been through it that you would always be like, oh, come on, walk it off. You know, I know you're hurting, but like it's going to have, you know, you had such a pragmatic look at the way love finds you, not you find love.
Yeah, I believe that if you live your life as a good person, and a caring person, that when you meet the right person, it'll you'll know it.
Yeah, and you know we, you know, have
you may have met the right person with Jared, with you. Who knows?
And I think it would be great to add more people to that relationship. Yeah, we have a lot of different views about politics and life and things, but I think we both can agree that like love is love and, you know, you never questioned my sexuality or relationship status and you've asked questions, but you've never given a shit. You know, you've always just wanted me and Megan to be happy and
just be happy and love who you love.
Yeah.
You know, that's the most important thing. I think you know, as a Christian, I consider myself a Christian man. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, the Bible is, tells you certain things about life, and but it is what it is. You know, if you love someone, I mean, it's always been that way. I mean, whether people like to admit it or not, mm-hmm. there's always been gay people. There's always been those that are confused about what their gender is, and I think it's got starting to get a little crazy nowadays. But
well, you're old.
I am. As I said, I'm in my golden years now, so.
Yeah, I call them your olden years.
Yes, golden and golden.
My theory is like, if it doesn't bother you, who fucking cares?
It's, hey, you know, your private life is your private life too, you know, and that's the way it is.
Unfortunately for you, I make mine very public.
I guess that's part of what you do, so that's fine.
Well, we've been recording for an hour, can you believe it?
No, I can't.
It went by quick, right?
It did.
Do you have anything to say to?
Yeah, I
got to
get to the football game.
Okay, that's what he's got to do.
The Alabama Auburn game, I think.
We
got
to watch the Iron Bowl.
That's
I'm not going to ask where people can follow you because I know you don't like to be followed or talked to. Because the one time when Jared and I set you up with an Instagram as a joke, I told all my followers to go follow you. You had a fucking heart attack.
My phone was blowing up all over the place.
I go,
what's going on? All these people are doing something. I'm just going to turn my phone off, which I did.
Oh, that was funny. So don't go follow my dad. He doesn't want to talk to anyone.
I'm not really on it. I know you put me on it. At Instagram, mm-hmm. is that what it is?
Oh, yeah, I put you on it where I think it's so funny.
I've never been back there, though. Anyway.
But tell the people that they should go buy my book.
You should buy this book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's going to help people.
Yeah, and that's part of my life story is living Kelsey's experience with her, too, because mm-hmm. I came out there to Hollywood a couple of times with her and got her set up in a couple of places that helped her along.
Oh yeah.
And it's been you know, she's so emotional, so dramatic that, you know, that those kind of the things that, that have affected her life are probably in my life too, but they just, they just don't affect me in the same way.
Yep.
And everybody's different. Yeah. Everybody's different.
And I think I was able to write a lot about that point of view because of, you know, you having a different view on it. Like, I think I was able to write from the perspective a lot of, if you have a loved one that doesn't go through what you go through, like, here's how they can be of help, and here's how to explain things to them. And like,
if you need stability, you know, it support. May help you find it.
Exactly.
Because I think you found it in certain things.
I think I've been through it all. Okay. It feels like a bit.
Oh, in God, I hope not. You're still pretty young.
Thanks, Dad, for talking. I know. Whoa. You weren't. You said you weren't nervous, but I know that you never know what's going to come out of my mouth. So I appreciate you being open and sharing your views and showing people that you don't have to have exactly the same mindset to still love someone and be family and support them and be around them all the time. And thanks for voting for Biden.
Well, you know I love you more than life itself.
Me and Jared say that because you and Mom say that to each other. Do you know that?
I
love you more than life itself.
I do.
Because you say that to Mom, too.
Yeah.
All right, Dad. Say bye to the confidants.
Bye-bye, confidants.
Bye-bye, confidants. Rate this 5 stars on iTunes. You know you can always find us at Confidently Pod on all social media. And don't forget to send us an email if you want. At Confidently Insecure Podcast.
Say bye to my little dog, Moxie.
Say bye, Moxie.
Bye, Moxie.
Bye, Moxie.